Dateline Washington, Thursday, February 12th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbas. In this edition, the stimulus vote draws near. We'll talk with California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock to find out why he's not impressed with the updated version of the stimulus plan, what he believes would make much more sense in stimulating the economy, and what lessons he believes the federal government ought to learn from the financial mess going on in his home state of California. Also in this edition, job creation for illegal aliens, that is. We'll talk with Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, about the compromised stimulus plan that does not force employers to make sure that those they hire as a result of stimulus money are actually legal to work in this country. Plus, deadlocked in Israel. We'll talk with Josh Goodman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies about the razor-close finish between Tzipi Livni and Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, who will actually end up being the next prime minister, and what that means for Middle East policy. And from the stimulus debate to the Lincoln bicentennial, we'll have our weekly chat with John Gizzi of Human Events. All that, plus Thursday's headlines, follow our discussion with California Congressman Tom McClintock, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is California Congressman Tom McClintock, a Republican representing the Golden State's 4th Congressional District. We want to get his reaction now to what appears to be the compromise version of a stimulus package worked out essentially by House and Senate Democrats, and the House and Senate will be asked to vote on this in the coming hours. And Congressman, it's good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg.
You, of course, were among the House Republicans who all voted no on the House version of the bill. I don't believe that any of you have actually seen the compromise version yet, but from what you know about it, is your mind likely to change at all?
Well, the problem with the bill is it's not going to help the economy. It's going to hurt it. It's going to do long-term damage to our potential growth by taking $800 billion that would have been made as loans to employers seeking to add jobs and home buyers seeking to buy homes and consumers seeking to buy consumer goods. That money's not going to be there for them to borrow because the federal government is borrowing it not to expand the economy, but to expand the government.
In terms of the process here, we've heard a lot about the process as well as the many concerns about the substance of this package. What's your reaction to how this has all played out? I know you're a new member of Congress, and there's been a lot of back and forth about what's fair and what's not fair. What's been your sense of this whole process unfolding?
Well, I'm afraid we've run afoul of McClintock's second law of political physics, which is the more we spend on our mistakes, the less willing we are to admit them. I mean, if you add up all of the bailouts and handouts to banks and all of the loan guarantees, it already totals about $9.7 trillion. As Bloomberg pointed out the other day, that's enough to buy up 90% of all of the mortgages in America. Not 90% of the bad mortgages, 90% of all mortgages. You know, an economist a few weeks ago pointed out that that is far more than the modern-day inflation-adjusted cost of the space race, the Vietnam War, the Louisiana Purchase, the Marshall Plan, and the New Deal combined. So if this kind of policy worked, we should be experiencing a period of unprecedented economic expansion. The problem is there is not one instance in all of recorded history when governments have been able to spend their way to prosperity.
What involvement have Republicans been allowed to have in this process? I know on the House, the majority party really calls all the shots. In the Senate, there's a little more flexibility for those out of power. But in terms of ideas that have been considered, were they really seriously considered? And what ideas did you and your colleagues offer?
Well, Republicans offered a plan of tax cuts and tax incentives that would produce twice the jobs at half the cost of the Obama-Pelosi plan. And no, they've not been interested in compromises or even in bipartisan discussions. As both Obama and Pelosi have repeatedly pointing out, we won, you lost, and they're bound and determined now to repeat exactly the same failed policies of the past administration.
Congressman, explain real quickly to our listeners what was the content of your alternate piece of legislation. Why do you believe you could have doubled the number of prospective jobs with half the price tag?
Well, we know what works. Reducing the burdens on productivity increases productivity. It worked when John F. Kennedy did it. in the early 1960s. It worked when Ronald Reagan did it in the early 1980s. And we also know what doesn't work. Massive government spending didn't work in Japan in the 1990s. It didn't work in America in the 1930s. So we forget that the unemployment rate in 1939, after nearly a decade of New Deal spending, was exactly the same as it was in 1991. Reducing the burdens on productivity increases productivity. In fact, look at the president's own numbers. He's telling us that he's going to create or save up to 4 million jobs at a cost of $800 billion. Now, if that sounds good, take out a pocket calculator and do the math. That comes to more than $200,000 for every job created. I pointed out we could send $100,000 checks to every one of those lucky 4 million families and only spend half of what Obama has proposed to spend. And as I said, we don't have that money. We're going to borrow it, and we're going to borrow it from the same capital pool that would otherwise have been available for people to get good loans, to buy homes, expand jobs, and buy consumer goods.
From what we're hearing, Congressman, about a third, actually a little more than a third of the compromise bill will involve tax breaks. Most of them are not permanent, if any of them are permanent. And as part of the compromise, it appears that the tax reductions for individuals and couples have actually been reduced to $400 for individuals, $800 for couples. Do you believe that particular aspect of the bill will help much to stimulate the economy?
Well, no, unfortunately, it's the wrong kind of tax cuts. It's the same kind of tax cuts that George Bush gave us just a year ago. Remember how that was supposed to stimulate the economy? Well, they weren't tax cuts at all. It was George McGovern's $1,000 per family proposal that got him laughed off the national stage in 1972. And perhaps one of the most vigorous opponents of that policy was the father of supply-side economics, the chairman of Ronald Reagan's Council of Economic Advisors, Arthur Laffer, who says that's not going to work. If you're going to reduce taxes, you have to do it at the marginal level. You have to reduce the business and corporate and capital gains taxes that are suppressing productivity. We have the second highest corporate tax rate in the world. It shouldn't surprise us that we're losing jobs to all of those nations that offer much kinder of a tax policy. And by the way, corporations don't pay taxes. Corporate taxes are paid only in one of three ways. There are only three ways it can be paid. It's by us as consumers through higher prices, by us as employees through lower wages, or by us as investors through lower earnings, and that's mainly our 401ks. Businesses do not pay business taxes, but business taxes do significantly suppress productivity. Reduce those burdens, you increase productivity.
We're talking with California Congressman Tom McClintock, and of course our California listeners are familiar with the congressman, but also political fans around the country will probably remember his name from the California recall debates of 2003, but he's been a state official in California for many years. And of course we're hearing now, Congressman, about the severe budget problems in California, folks getting IOUs instead of tax refunds and so forth. What lessons from the California example do you think we ought to apply here on the national stage?
Well, it's a very good question because we're embarking down exactly the same path that's brought California to the brink of bankruptcy. In fact, the current budget deficit at the federal level is estimated at $1.2 trillion. Add this new spending measure on top of it, it's over $2 trillion. That is 150 times the size of the deficit that has brought California to its financial knees. And California's problem, as the federal government's, is not the direct result of the recession. The recession's been a catalyst, but the direct problem is that both governments have utterly failed to responsibly manage their finances. Before the state's revenues began turning down, Schwarzenegger was spending $11 billion more than he was taking in every year.
And Congressman, moving forward, you talked about the debt situation. We're going to have to borrow this money over and over again, and it's going to add to our national debt. And a lot of folks are wondering if the same countries that are also dealing with their own economic crises are going to be able to pony up the money again. And if they can't, that could lead potentially to significant inflation in this country. How real of a threat do you think that is?
Well, the threat of inflation is absolutely imminent. The Federal Reserve has irresponsibly increased the monetary base to the point now where I think inflation is absolutely inevitable. But if you look at the lack of fiscal discipline that we saw in California and what has resulted from that, you can project what's going to be happening to the United States. A few years ago, it was said, oh, well, California will always be able to borrow money. And a day finally came when they ran up such a horrendous debt that the lending market simply said, no, I think we'll pass on your debt this time. You need to get your house in order. There are finite limits to how much a government may borrow. And that ought to be of particular concern to our nation, because if they wreck California, there's still 49 other states people can move to. If they wreck our country, where are we going to move? I mean, history tells us, warns us, in fact, is shouting at us, that bankrupt nations do not last very long. They fall prey to other nations because they can no longer finance their own defense. And when we see the kind of debt that is now being heaped on the national economy, begin to realize we're not only just talking about the future of our prosperity, we may well be affecting the very survival of our nation.
Last 60 seconds here with California Congressman Tom McClintock. And Congressman, we saw just a couple of days ago how the investors really displayed a lack of confidence in the explanation from the Treasury Secretary about what he would be doing with the second half of the Wall Street bailout money. Do you anticipate much confidence in this stimulus package, assuming it passes?
No, I do not. And again, show me one time in the entire history of civilization where a government has been able to spend its way into prosperity. I can show you a lot of cases where excessive government spending has destroyed an economy and brought down great nations. I mean, you need look no further than the Soviet Union to see that phenomenon. But spending our way to prosperity, that is a siren song that has never produced results in the entire history of human civilization.
Well, Congressman, it's certainly a dire time and obviously a fierce debate over this package. Thank you, sir, very much for sharing your thoughts with us.
Greg, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
California Congressman Tom McClintock represents his state's 4th Congressional District. This is Dateline Washington.